Do you think people are going to think we sound the same?
Who, me and you?
Yeah.
Definitely. We have exactly the same accent.
I'm going to put on my posh podcasting accent.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the one that everyone thinks is sexy. Which...
Not that one guy.
Static.
Oh, shit. Is that
Cut
me?
It out. Yes. Remain perfectly motionless for the entire cast.
Nope. Just don't move your headset at all. Stay perfectly still.
This is what I tried to tell her, Matt. She doesn't listen.
No, she's a woman, Steve. Whoa!
Zing. So all of these women are being constantly abducted, and they pulled out their little neck implant to... Like, every time they get re-abducted, do the aliens just put another one in there?
He's on a bridge. The train is approaching. Mulder's basically going to leap onto this train like a boss.
I don't know. They just put a bunch of X-Files shit in a blender and turned it on, and this is what came out.
Every time I see Lone Gunman and they're not singing like a barbershop quartet, I'm going to be disappointed now.
Jo just upped her rating.
That's what I thought, because she said, like, C-plus or something.
Yeah, you just said C-plus.
All right.
How are the listeners supposed to have any faith in what we're talking about if you can't get a rating straight? Fuck it, I'm switching mine to an A.
Right, okay.
I quit. You guys just aren't even going to try anymore.
The Explodey Files, brought to you by DeadLantern.com.
Boobies.
And welcome to episode 29 of the Zombie Girls podcast. Only one away from 30. That's got to be like a milestone, like equivalent of like the 100 or 200 episodes.
For us, yeah.
So maybe we'll have to do something special. With me tonight as my fabulous co-hosts are Miss Ariel.
Hi.
And all the way from sunny England, Miss Exploding Joe.
Hello.
Hello. So, tonight we're going to be talking, or tonight, this morning we're going to be talking about
if only.
Two films that are touching on some themes that I think we're probably going to be revisiting occasionally over, you know, the life of Zombie Girls. It's the first in our series we're going to call Motherhood Horror. So, tonight we're going to be talking about Mama. That's kind of appropriate for Motherhood Horror.
Yeah, I think so.
And believe it or not, Lords of Salem by the new Rob Zombie flick by the Artur Mr. Zombie. Ariel will be playing the role of the zombie Rob Zombie apologist on today's show.
I said I sort of like one movie and I'm like a Rob Zombie lover.
I know, I was like, you like Rob Zombie, right? She's like, no! Why do you keep saying that? I was like, you like Halloween, right? Then that's enough. Although I may get the bad reputation as the apologist after tonight. I think I might be the only one that actually has positive things. But I think our theme tonight, what we decided on was that it's like reluctant motherhood.
Yeah.
So before we dig into that and all of our motherhood issues... By the way, I think it's worth noting, none of us have any children.
Yeah.
So, you know, take from that what you want. I want to talk a little bit about what you guys have been watching. I'll start with Exploding Joe, because Ariel's already giving me the deer in the headlights look. What have you been watching, Miss Explodey?
I haven't really been watching a ton of films, but I have been watching loads of TV. I've been catching up on Game of Thrones, which is awesome, and is getting better and better.
So good. Who thought you'd ever feel bad for Jaime Lannister?
Not me. I know. And on your recommendation, I started watching Sons of Anarchy, which I've been really, really liking as well.
Oh, good.
I'm only about 10 episodes into the first season so far. It actually took me a while to figure out whether or not I liked it and whether or not I liked the characters. So I couldn't really figure out where it was going, but... You know, what happens sort of like 8 or 9 episodes in, and that made me go, oh, cool.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen the first season. Can you...
Okay, well, I don't want to ruin anything, but Jax kills somebody. Someone who... all right, well, I'll tell you.
Go ahead and spoil it.
he kills the ATF agent that's been stalking...
That is kind of like a turning point in the show.
Yeah, made me go, shit. Yeah, okay, all right, I'm in now. So that was really, really cool. Film-wise, let's see. quite a few things at the cinema. I saw Evil Dead. I know you guys touched on it on the last episode.
I'd love to hear your thoughts, though.
I really liked it. I wasn't sure going in what sort of tone it was going to take. And people have been asking me, you know, is it like the original? Is it funny? And I think, well, you're remembering Evil Dead 2, not Evil Dead 1.
Right, right.
But, yeah, I think people kind of forget. And I actually rewatched the first Evil Dead before I saw it, and it doesn't really hold up that well. And I might be blaspheming on a horror podcast by saying that. But yeah, the original, I don't really think is a very good movie at all. I think everybody remembers part 2.
Yeah, I do too. Part
1. Yeah. It's hard to say whether the remake is in the same sort of vein as the second one, because it's kind of silly and kind of over the top, but it's not really a comedy, and it's not really going for the same sort of feeling as Evil Dead 2. But it doesn't take itself seriously.
Laughing a lot in that movie, but it might have just been like the nervous, like anxiety release laughter.
Well, I happened to see it too, and I definitely think there were points where I laughed, but not in the same way.
Like you're like,
yeah.
Oh god, her hand's ripping off.
Yeah, it's kind of like you just can't believe what's going on, rather than the kind of slapsticky, this is really silly,
exactly.
Like in the older movies. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just over the top. That last shot of the girl just chainsawing the face of the demon girl with the house on fire behind it and raining blood. It was just, I mean, it's like, you know, they looked into the mind of horror fans and said, that's what I want. Chainsawing somebody else in the face as it's raining blood amongst the backdrop of a, you know, flaming house. And it was perfect. It was great.
Yeah. That's when the movie turned into a rape revenge film.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure what they were going to do with the tree rape, but I thought what they did was good, because I thought if they just put it in for the sake of it, people are going to say it shit because they're just doing it for the sake of it. And if they didn't put it in, people would say that they wussed out.
That's a good point. They
kind of went in between, and it worked, I think. It wasn't gratuitous, it wasn't pointless, but it was it kind of had a point, but it wasn't I didn't feel like they wussed out either.
So right on.
That was cool. So thumbs up on Evil Dead. The other night I saw Star Trek.
How was that?
It was good. I liked it. I'm not a big Star Trek fan. I've never really seen the original series or any of the older movies or anything like that. I quite like the first movie, the movie a couple of years ago. Just as a popcorn flick, really. I mean, there's not a lot of substance there, but it's kind of fun. And I thought the same of the second one. It was just entertaining enough. I probably wouldn't really watch it again, but yeah, I thought it was good.
Awesome.
Did you like it or not like it? Or,
I haven't seen it yet. I've seen the obviously. Okay. I like the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek. That was like really kind
so
of my entree to Star Trek as well.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So I think it's very much more of the same, really. So if you like that, you'll probably like this one too, I'd say. I saw a film called Compliance. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
I have heard about this, but I have not watched it. I saw a trailer for it a while back. And I was kind of like, I'm not sure how they're going to fill a full runtime with this scenario, but it's pretty horrifying.
Yeah. You know about the original case that it's based on?
Well, I heard it was like based on a true story, but I didn't know how based on a true story it was.
Apparently really, really closely.
Really?
Yeah. And I heard about the case before I heard about the film. And, you know, the guy prank calls, I think it was a McDonald's, but they don't have McDonald's in the film. They make up this chain, you know,
right.
Pretending to be a cop and, saying that one of the employees, a young girl, has been stealing, and the manager has to, you know, interrogate her and strip search her, and things escalate, and that results in a pretty serious sexual assault at the end. And that apparently, it all really happened. That they change a couple of things in the film. They make the girl a bit older. I think she was 16, but in the film she's something like 19 or 20.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and it's pretty... I mean, because usually when I'm watching a film and it says this is based on true events or inspired by true events, I think, bullshit, rubbish, never happened. Like when you watch Open Water and it says based on a true story. And
right,
think,
right.
Sure. Like,
two people went missing and you made up the rest.
No, so, I think you're right, though. Compliance was really close. They even did a Law and Order episode based on
that. Did you
see
Compliance?
No, but I've heard that it was, like, really close.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it was interesting, but I think if you went in not knowing that it was, that it really happened and how true it is, you wouldn't believe it. So I think they had to deliberately say, you know, nothing in this film was exaggerated. And there was a lady sat behind me in the cinema who kept muttering, oh, stupid people, why are you doing this? Oh, it's so stupid. And I thought, well, yeah, and that's
kind of the point.
Yeah, because the fact is, Like, at no point did anyone go, this is going a bit far. I'm not really sure I should be doing this. It's definitely worth watching. It's not, I mean, I wouldn't really call it a horror film, but it's really unsettling. And knowing where it's leading makes it even worse. And you're thinking, yeah. So a cautious recommend, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And something older that I caught up with that I've heard a lot about is a Norwegian film called Cold Prey.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this. This is the slasher, yeah. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It was cool. I mean, it's nothing really spectacular, pretty standard slasher story. But something about it being set, like, in the snowy mountains just gives it something, I don't know, I can't really put my finger on it, but just something a little different and something, yeah, I liked it. There's not really a lot I can say, but it was just, yeah, it was a cool slasher movie.
Well, I think there's a sequel. Are you going to check it out?
I think there's two or three, yeah. I think
really?
One of them
wow.
Might, yeah, I think one of them might even be a prequel, because it hints at something, you know, like the origin of the slasher character.
Jesus.
But yeah, it was cool. It's, you know, likable characters and good acting and pretty good kills and stuff. Yeah, I reckon.
Well, nice.
That
I can always go for a good slasher film.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So yeah, those that's what I've been watching.
Awesome. How about you, Miss Ariel?
I actually have not been watching much of anything lately, TV mm-hmm. or movies, surprisingly, when I usually yeah. spend the majority of my time doing just that. but the few things that I have seen, I did go see Evil Dead.
What did you think of it?
I really liked it, too. I went into it really skeptical, thinking I probably wouldn't like it, just because I love the original three uh-huh. so much, and I had a feeling it was not going to be, you know, what I wanted out of it. But I really mm-hmm. enjoyed it. It was different than what I expected, and really brutal. I mean, I found myself, like, doing that kind of fetal position thing in the seat yeah. during certain scenes. Like, when people, like self-mutilation really
yeah.
gets to me for some reason. Yeah. More than, like, you can do anything you want to somebody else, but when mm-hmm. you do it to yourself, it, like, really, like, the scene mm-hmm. with the girl in the bathroom.
I think that was
glass,
one of the worst. That it was
really
just sound. It was like...
Yeah, like the was sound was terrible. Yeah. And then when she turns around and you see some of it, it's like, ah! And I didn't expect so many arms to get removed. I thought maybe they'd do one. You know?
Yeah.
They really went for it.
They really went for it.
Which was kind of awesome.
I love that the final girl, or the Ash character, ultimately was Mia.
Yeah, I kept trying to figure
nice
out who was going to be.
And it wasn't the rapey dude from
yeah.
Dead Girl.
Right.
Oh, yeah. He wasn't.
Clearance Rack, Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Because as soon as I didn't know he was going to be in it, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my god, it's Joaquin Phoenix. That must be the same guy.
You're like, oh crap, I see Clearance Rack.
No. okay, so I saw that, and then... I was just telling Rachel that I got to see Chronicle finally. She's been telling me forever to see that.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I really liked it. I mean, I thought it was such a different take on the whole, like, superpower story. Mm-hmm. And
I told her my favorite part is when he kills a spider.
Yeah, of course. Torture as many spiders as you want.
Yes. Good times.
Yeah, I've killed a few spiders in Rachel's home before.
Thank you. I'm useless in that department. Like, one time I had to kill one by myself, and I was, like, shaking all over. This is terrible.
Oh, you wouldn't like my house, then, because we save all the spiders.
You do? They probably just keep coming back in. Listen, the world is a big place. There's plenty of room outside my house. For them to live. And I will live and let live outside my front door.
When
you come into my home, into my sanctuary.
See, and I don't mind daddy long legs.
Death
sentence. So, like, when I was living in Santa Barbara, I had one, two that lived in my shower. And I was, like, okay with that. Because they just stayed up in the corner.
Are you fucking high? Have you seen arachnophobia?
Here.
They fall down on your body. And
no,
you can't
it never
hear
happened.
Them. You can't feel them because of the water. That's
well, no,
all
now
I would
I'm
be
not
thinking.
Gonna be able to do
That's
it.
All I would be thinking. Like, when is it gonna drop on my head?
Yeah, the thing about spiders that creeps me out is I get bug bites and then they, like, blow up. Because
you're catching and releasing.
But I always am like, Jesus. When you get one on, like, your inner thigh or something, and then you have to think about the fact that there was a spider there, that's what
So no summer out. Parties at Ariel's is what I'm hearing. That's all I'm hearing. Also, I'm going to have to start checking your bag to make sure you're not smuggling any like, illicit eight-legged freaks.
Okay, and then the last thing I saw, I just watched a week ago, was Dylan Dog.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which I actually...
That was one that kind of just, like, came and went, yeah.
I really liked it.
Oh, good.
I just thought it was so much fun. I mean, it's not like... You know, you're not going to think of it as, like, the best movie ever, or they did something, you know, completely original. But I just thought it was really entertaining. I mean, I like sort of the mystery detective story, PI kind of angle. And, you know, I like zombies and all right. of that, and the zombie best friend. And it was, you know, really funny, too, and kind of slapsticky. And I thought it was really fun. So I would recommend it if you need something, like... You want to see something that's horror-like because you watch everything horror, but you're sort of in the mood for something really light. It mm-hmm. would be a really good one to watch.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah, that's all for me.
Good times. Okay. I know, I too am kind of light on horror. I watched a bunch of stuff for the Splattercast, but you'll have to listen to those episodes to hear all about that. The one thing I did watch that I did not talk about is a film called Resolution. It's like a little indie film, and you can catch it on, like, Amazon. Like, you can download it on Amazon, and it's on a few of the other on-demand sites, but probably the easiest place is to get it on the Amazon streaming. And I actually really enjoyed this movie. It's about two friends. One of them is, like kind of like a norm, like a... he's married and has a kid on the way and is sort of just like a normal dude, and his best friend who is a drug addict, and his drug addict friend sends him this video of him, like, out in a field, like, just smoking crack and like shooting guns and acting crazy. So he decides to go up. He lives, like, up in the mountains, and he decides to go up and see him and see if he can get him to go into rehab. So he gets up there, and he's, like, living in this, like, half-finished house, and he's, like, completely out of his fucking mind, like, delusionally thinks there's these birds that are trying to attack him, and he's, like, shooting his gun at the everywhere, and so he, like, you know, he's like, don't shoot, I'm coming up. He gets up there, and he tries to talk him into going to rehab, and the guy's like, no, dude, crack is my destiny, I love it, I'm crack not ever going destiny. To rehab, you know, it's, like, awesome wow. to see you, but I love this shit. And he's like, okay, and he's like, all right, well, I'll see you later. And he's, as he's saying goodbye to him, he pulls out a taser and zaps him and handcuffs him to a wall. And he's like, okay, I want you to just, I'm going to stay with you for 7 days. I want you to get off this shit for 7 days. At the end of it, if you still want to do crack, then at least I fucking tried. And, you know, like, it would be fine, all fine and dandy, except for there's a couple of problems. One thing is there's, like, the crack dealers keep coming around because it turns out his friend owes them money. Ooh. And they're like, the casting's pretty good, dude, because the guys are super cracky, but they're, like, they actually seem more methy. So, like...
like you can tell the difference.
You awesome. Can! Like, cracky people are a little bit sadder, you know what I mean? Like they're really, like, you know, like, shit is going goes fast. It goes downhill fast if you're, like, cracky, right? Whereas meth, there's, a period of maintaining that can go on for years and years and years.
Uh-huh. Before you completely right. fall apart.
And also, like some psychosis that goes along with that. Like, in, I don't know how much time you spent in the trailer park. But, like, you know, methy dudes can be pretty scary.
Yeah, and I lived in Stockton for a while.
Oh, okay. So you know about yeah. what I'm talking about. I don't know about you, Miss Explody Joe.
Yeah, not really.
Oh, you're lucky. You.
Not a huge.
You haven't had a lot of, like, meth exposure. I can tell you some fucking stories about my cracky old neighbors when I lived in the trailer park. I mean, they're really funny now, but they're kind of sad. Like, right. like they would, like, you know, like the time the guy came over and he, like, accidentally super glued in his dentures wrong, and it was like, take care of your teeth. And I was like, no shit.
he is super glued.
But that's just one of a thousand stories. Anyway, so they're, like, kind of coming around intimidating him to try to get the money or the drugs off of him. And the guy's like, I don't know where I hid the drugs. Like, I was all fucked up and I just put them somewhere. The other thing is they don't, he didn't realize it, but his friend was actually squatting on a, like a Native American reservation. And so, like, the enforcers are coming around, like, you aren't supposed to be here. You need to get off this land. So he, like, bribes them to let them stay. And then there's a third element, and this is sort of the main sort of issue that he's facing, is that he begins finding, it starts off with a set of photos, of three photos, where it tells, like, you see, like a couple, and then the next one there seems to be, like, a problem, and the third one they're dead. And then he later on, he's, like, in this little, like, ruins of a stone house after he's gotten in a big fight with his friend who's like, let me off this fucking wall, I want to smoke some crack. And I don't think that's actual dialogue, but you get the idea.
Sure.
And, like, he kind of gets led to find a record where he listens to the record and the person ends up killing themselves. Then he finds the shed that's full of, like, audiovisual equipment and journals, and there's, like, this...
I love movies like that.
Yeah, and it's kind of a bummer that it came out after Sinister, because I think people are going to see it and be like, oh, this wants to be Sinister, but it's totally, like, its own little indie thing. And it's... I actually really enjoyed it. One of the things that's great about it is the chemistry between the two lead characters feels super legit. The crackhead guy's hella funny. Like, he's funny in that sad crackhead sort of way, but he's also just sort of, there's also kind of a little bit of a Tucker and Dale vibe. I mean, it's not funny like that at all, but it's
you mean like that the friendship
kind of,
between them,
that kind of, like, the friendship feels real and the chemistry is really, really good. and the ending, like, at some point I wouldn't mind covering this on the show because the ending is really open to interpretation and I would love to get feedback of other people, because I was kind of like, I don't know if I got that. I feel a little bit like a dum-dum right now. I need someone to help explain to me what just happened. There's some stuff with, like, there's a lot of, like, metaphysical stuff about, I can't even go into it, but at one point he runs into this French dude that's, like, living up in the mountains, and, like, he's talking to him and holding a mirror up so that you can see the guy too, and then there's another mirror. It's this weird shot where you're, like, getting multiple versions of him and the guy all that he's facing all in one shot, and he's talking about, like, light and dark, and, like, are angels demons, or is it just about perception? That's what I mean. Like, so at the end of the movie you're like, WTF, you know? So, but I would say that I definitely recommend the movie, if only so that you can write me an email and tell me what the fuck just happened at the end.
Rachel needs an explanation.
But resolution was pretty good. The other thing I was supposed to watch, but I ran out of time because a million circumstances, but I'm going to be talking about it for sure on the next episode. Chuck Connery from Horrorphilia made his debut film called Morbid, and he sent me a screener, and I have it, and I'm gonna watch it this afternoon. Sorry, Chuck, I know I promised I'd watch it for the show, but I really wanted to. I just, shit happened. So next episode I will be talking about Morbid, and if you guys are interested in seeing it, I'm sure he'd be happy to forward a screener your way. Apparently it's a slasher, and the one review I heard of it made it sound pretty good. You know, like, for an indie movie, so.
Yeah, of course.
I'm looking forward to that, and Chuck's a good dude, so that should be interesting.
Yeah.
But I shall try to put that aside and be legit with my review. So, look forward to that on the next episode, people. Morbid by Chuck Connery. And a guy named Goober, I guess? I don't know.
Okay. I want a friend named Goober.
Just
so you can say Goober.
So, that's it for what you've been watching, right?
Yeah.
Did we cover everything?
Yeah, we're good.
All right. Speedy. Look at us. So, I guess we should delve into these movies. Are you ready to take on motherhood? Whore. Not actual motherhood. Ew.
Yeah.
So, our first film is called Mama, or Mama, if you're of saucy Latin descent. And it is, it's actually directed by someone named Andre Muschietti, which is the best name ever.
Yeah, it is.
But most people think it's directed by Guillermo del Toro because his name is so heavily attached to it. And it definitely has a Guillermo del Toro dark fairy tale vibe.
Yeah, his
to
stamp
it.
Is definitely on it.
And the deal with this, sort of the backstory with this movie, is that there was a short film that, and it sort of made the, like, you know, like it showed up on a bunch of sites a few years ago called Mama, that was a little, like, 2 to 3 minute scene of two little girls kind of running from Mama, who, and in the scene actually, it makes it up into the movie. And it's just a little very self-contained scene of them running, basically running away from, like, a creepy mom whose hair is, like, floating in the air, who's angry, as she attacks. And but it's very, like, claustrophobic and atmospheric and like, effectively creepy, I thought. You guys have both seen
definitely.
It. What are you guys' thoughts on the little short film?
Yeah, agreed, because you don't know what's going on. It's just the two girls waking up and going down to see Mama, and you don't know what she is, you don't know where she came from, and then they're running away from her, and then that's kind of it's very short. So yeah, is it like 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes?
Yeah, it's really quick little thing. Like, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. So
yeah, it's on YouTube. People can just look it up on YouTube.
Definitely.
I can totally understand why he would want to base a film on it, because it was really cool.
Right. So Guillermo del Toro saw it and was, like, totally sucked in and wanted to see, as it's sort of without context, I think he wanted to see it fully realized within the context of, a larger story. So he ended up producing this film and really kind of kickstarting this guy Andre's career, I would imagine. And so we ended up with Mama. That's the backstory. So here's sort of the plot summary. I'm going to try to keep this short, even for my standards. You don't even realize synopsis is our skill, people. and I'm 29 episodes into this. I will master this, goddammit. So, all right. So
boy, isn't.
Shut up. Stop it! Don't rub it in! Okay, so the film opens, and it's outside of, like, a suburban, sort of upper class, not even upper middle class, home. And there's a car that has been, like, hastily parked in front of it, and the car doors open, and over the news, you hear that there's a hedge fund that has gone bankrupt. And, like, we're in economic meltdown as a result. And that the person, one of the people who run the hedge fund, was found dead. The other one is missing. You hear a gunshot in the distance. And the next thing you see, Jamie Lannister, which is how I always will think of this poor dude forever, running upstairs and grabbing his two kids. One of them looks like she's about 4, and the other one looks about 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Something like
I don't
that.
Know from kid ages. Yeah, I'm going to count on you, Ariel. Yeah. You're the one with kid exposure here.
2?
All right. Our expert has spoken.
Big question mark.
He grabs the kids up and was like, we gotta go. And they hit the road and they end up crashing their car. And they make their way to this cabin. It's an abandoned cabin, kind of spooky. You've probably seen it if you've seen the trailers. And while they're there, he kind of has a little breakdown. He gets out a gun and you get the sense that he's, like, midway through a murder-suicide.
Right.
And he doesn't he doesn't really have the guts to shoot himself, so he ends up going up to his daughter, who is telling him, like, there's a woman out there, and her feet don't touch the ground. And puts the gun to the back of her head, and before he's able to pull the trigger, like, basically something intercepts him, grabs him, snaps his neck, and drags him off. And, obviously, it's Mama. So we flash forward and now his twin brother and his rock star girlfriend played by Jessica Chastain in the worst wig ever. I hate that fucking wig. Okay.
I know. I didn't even recognize her. I was like, that girl's cute. And you're like,
wig. It's not doing her any favors though.
It's true.
She's beautiful.
But I still
found
her like incredibly appealing.
Well, okay then. So she's a very attractive lady. But okay, so he has been using whatever money he has left to search for his brother and the kids because they've never been found. And eventually, and he's got the girlfriend, she's in a rock band, and she doesn't want no kids. We're introduced to her with her actually like taking a pregnancy test and being very happy that it came back not pregnant. And
yeah, that's the characterization there. Done.
Yeah.
So that's all you need to know. Rock band, and not pregnant and glad about it. So it turns out, like, so he's paid these like country dudes to like with the bloodhound to continue to search for his brother. And it's been what, 4 years now?
Five years.
Okay. So they end up finding the cabin and the girls are inside and they have gone fully feral.
Oh yeah.
Which I thought was, I mean, I think that's an interesting idea. I don't know. Have you guys ever seen like videos about
yes.
feral children?
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that fascinating.
Like Oksana, the girl that was raised by dogs. I mean, it's so fucking sad.
It is.
But it's amazingly interesting. Mm-hmm,
exactly. Like,
the way the human mind works and what it does, like, and how it actually changes the human mm-hmm. mind to be cut off from, like, socialization with humans is fucking fascinating.
Yeah. And this, I mean, you just see the kids for a short period of time in that cabin, but it's really effectively creepy.
Yeah. It's very, like, the way that they have them moving and running around yes. on all four. One of the things that's really cool, and I didn't talk about this, is actually that in the credits, you see, if you pay attention to the drawings, because the whole, under the credits is the children's drawings on the wall, and they start off standing up, and by the end,
they're on all fours.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of get the, like, kind of the backstory of what's going on with them. So they, you know, the dudes are freaked out to find the kids all feral, and, you know, gives them the good news, like, yes, we found the kids. And they're hospitalized because they clearly need psychiatric care. Yeah. The custody of the kids ends up going to Jamie Lannister and Annabelle, who is Jessica Chastain in The Terrible Wig. Despite the fact that, the sister of the children's mother also was kind of contesting for custody. And she kind of pops up later in the movie. But they take the kids home. The kids are, like, Annabelle is very ambivalent about having to take on the motherhood role. She does not want to be called mom. She does not really know what she's doing. She's in over her head. She's got, like, an instant family that's totally fucked up. She's not really happy about it, but she's standing by her dude. Even though her friend's like, you didn't sign up for this. You're in a rock band. creepy stuff starts happening. You got a couple of scenes that I thought were really great where there's one in particular where it's like almost like a split screen, the way they've set up the composition of the shot, where you can see down the hallway on the right side of the screen, but the left side of the screen, on the right side of the screen, you can see into the bedroom and it looks like the girls are playing a tug of war with a blanket. But then the older girl walks by and you realize that she's playing with Mama.
Right, that the younger girl is playing with somebody else.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that shot.
Oh, it's really good.
Yeah, really, really cool.
Yes. So, like I said, the girls are not adjusting well. And Annabelle's basically kind of like talking about that with Jamie Lannister, who's kind of, I don't know, he's just kind of has... He's so hopeful that it's going to work out. He's not really hearing her a little bit.
Yeah, he doesn't want to believe that it could be really bad. Like, he just thinks they're going to turn it around really quickly.
Yeah. Well, bad news for him.
Yeah.
So they're, like, about to get their groove on when she sees someone is in the house. And he goes out to investigate, she comes out of a stain in the wall. Which, by the way, it's not that it scared me, but, like, the next morning when I was, like, half awake, half asleep, trying to, like, decide whether or not to get out of bed, I thought it, like, I had, like, a halfway dream that there was a stain on my wall. Oh, and I was like, okay, I'm up, I'm out. So she comes out of the stain and, like, pushes him down the stairs and he ends up in a coma, whatever. And now...
I love how you say that so dismissively.
Well, that's kind of how they treat the character, right? They're like, okay, how do we get this dude out of the way with the quickness?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And later on in the movie, when she, like, tells him, like, Mama's real, like, he knows, right? Like, she pushed him... She came out of a stain in the wall and pushed him down the stairs. Do you really have to tell him that Mama's real?
Right.
So now Jessica Chastain's character, Annabelle, is, like, the reluctant mother is now the sole care for them while he's recovering. He's, like, in a temporary coma. And at first she's, you know, continues to be really ambivalent. Over a period of time, we get a bunch of, like, spooky moments. but she starts to actually bond with the children a little bit more. The older one is who's been able to maintain her language skills, definitely is more drawn to Annabelle, but is afraid to reciprocate any sort of affection because Mama gets jealous. The little one is definitely a little bit harder. They do kind of have a moment in the movie, but for the most part, she's way more attached to the Mama character.
And, yeah, she really loves Mama.
And she was so little when they ended up in the cabin that she does not have communication skills that the older sister does and is really, really feral. Like, she continues to sleep under the bed. She only wants to eat cherries because that's what Mama fed them. And is, filthy and dirty and bruised and, crazy,
yeah,
scary
matted
teeth.
Hair.
Yeah, there's no, she is not civilized in any way in the way that the older sister is able to kind of, regain mm-hmm. through memories of her childhood, able to kind of, really, I don't know.
And the psychiatrist guy works with her more.
Right. The other part of this is there's a psychiatrist who is, he is doing, hypnosis with the girls with the older girl Victoria, and he at first thinks this character Mama is something they created, this maternal character to help take care of them while they were in the cabin. Then he thinks that Victoria, he's the worst.
I know.
And then he thinks Victoria is disassociating and she's Mama. And then he starts to realize that maybe there's something else going on. And he goes to the archives, or I don't know what this is, some sort of records thing where the archivist is this crazy old lady with a long gray braid and a series of Three Wolf t-shirts.
Yeah, she reminds me of a Berkeley hippie lady,
Definitely. She is definitely the person that would
throwback.
Judge you for getting white flour at the flour bins at Whole Foods. I will be getting this whole grain. Enjoy your white flour death powder. But she basically is the exposition queen in this movie.
Yeah.
Because every time he goes there, start to find the backstory that there, and ultimately what she discovers is there's this woman, Helvetia, who, she was in a mental hospital, had a baby. They took her baby away. She snatched up the baby. And when she was trying to get away, she ended up jumping off a cliff, but she lost the baby in the jump and has been, she's still haunting the earth, trying to right this wrong.
Yeah.
And for some reason,
you get the ghost monologue that you get in every ghost movie. When someone dies and they have an angry spirit and
right.
And this one's especially egregious too, because she's do you believe in ghosts? They are a twisted emotion left behind. I was like, bitch, how do you know so much? Did your shirt tell you that? Did your Three Moon shirt tell you that? With your Wolf Moon shirt? So yes, yeah, that's definitely, she's guilty of that. And then he ends up going clearance rack Van Helsing for a minute, where he's I am going into the woods and I will find Helvetia. And
I know, what the fuck did he think he was doing?
Who goes out there alone?
I know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is where you get this is where it's more of a fairy tale than a horror movie at this point. So he goes out to the woods thinking he's going to communicate with Mama. I guess he's writing a book, and I don't know if he thought this was going to be how he...
Yeah, he says something about that he needs this for his research, for his book.
And
he's kind of a tool about his book, too, because the whole reason Annabelle stays with those kids instead of leaving is because he's, basically blackmailing her.
Yeah, she even asks him, am I in any danger? And he's what, from an 8-year-old kid?
Yeah, and she even questions whether she's the best person to take care of them, because they're so...
Right, but if he does... the reason they ended up with the kids is because of his support.
Right.
And if they don't have the kids, then they're going to move in with the aunt across the country, and he won't have access to them for research purposes.
Yeah.
So, he's kind of douchey. But, so he goes to the cabin, and I know that I've seen this scene before, it's not the first time ever, but I always find the camera thing a very effective...
I know.
Like,
it's because you can't see what's going on except in little flashes, that flashbulb
right.
thing. Rear Window did that, and it was really effective.
Okay, so this really is not the first time this happened. I mean, I think of Silent House because there's one of those scenes in that movie. But you could hear, I think the setup for this is great because the cabin is such a creepy setting. And you can hear her, like, moaning in the walls. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's, you know, moving around him, like, throughout the walls. And she ultimately attacks him and he's, like, snapping photos as she's getting closer and closer. Which is pretty spooky. And what else happens that we need to talk about? Ultimately, I think, you know, there's a confrontation with the girl, with Mama, where, like, you... And this is where the scene from the short story comes in, where Mama, like, Victoria has told Annabelle that she loves her, and there's been a bonding moment between Annabelle and the little one, Lily, and Mama is pissed. Mama is not having any bit of that. So she shows up, and Victoria's like, don't look at her, she's angry, and Mama attacks, and Annabelle is... finally sees her for the first time, like sees her full on. There's one point where she sees her and doesn't realize it's her at first. She's under a blanket, which I thought was another really creepy moment in the movie. And then she's in the closet. Ah! So, Mama ends up taking over the body of the aunt and then taking the kids out to the cabin. And Annabelle and the uncle who's awake now and wandering around in the woods.
The body of the baby.
No, I'm talking about Mama takes the body.
Sorry.
Yeah. The second time I watched it, I think the purpose of that is because she moves between walls, but she needed something to be able to take the girls, like, to transport the girls.
How did she get from the cabin to the house, then?
Through the walls.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, the black shit on the walls is kind of like a portal. Right, a portal. And she teleports in some way, but to take someone out of it, she has to...
Oh, I see. To actually take the girls with her.
Body or something.
Because the first time I watched it, I was like, what the fuck was the point of that? And then, because the body's like a husk when they get to the cabin.
Ugh, yeah.
So,
it's creepy.
But I think that's what that was about, was transporting the kids.
Seeing the aunt with Mama's face was really creepy.
Yeah.
And the way she, like, moved all sort of hunched over to the side. And
yeah, Mama does some really creepy-ass acrobatics. I'll get to that at the end. Anyways, before I get into the full-on spoilers, do you guys want to talk a little bit about what you thought of the film?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I've got a bit of a gripe with some of the psychiatric stuff that comes from the doctor in terms of the development of the kids. I mean, this might just be because I'm a linguist and I've studied this kind of thing, but like when he says that the older girl, Victoria, she remembers some of her vocabulary from before she was taken and everything, and I thought, well, like, surely the younger one is going to have more of a sort of blank slate and she's going to adjust better to civilization than the older one, I thought. So that didn't really sit well with me. And how the, I mean, because they're both, I mean, I think there's only some, like, 2 years between them, so there's not a lot in it, but both of them should, I think, adapt pretty well to real life and learn how to speak and everything like that. And I didn't buy that she would remember her old life, really, from being just 3 or 4 years old. So that was just me. I like that these, like, in both films, actually, in Lords of Salem as well, all these, like, tattooed metal chicks are getting some attention. I'm definitely on board with that. I didn't understand why it took 5 years for them to find the cabin, though, because it's really close to where they, like, well, it seems really close to where they crashed the car. It's walking distance, at least, for the first Jamie Lannister to walk the kids.
Well, they had never found the car before, right?
I thought, because he crashes, like, quite close to the road, and I figured near there there'd be a radius that they'd be
I just thought, because you see the two guys that are looking for them, like, the guy's taking a piss, and he sees the car, and he's like, you know... starts calling to the other guy like they had never seen it before.
Oh, right, because when they crash, it seems really close to the road that they crash, and you'd think that would be really easy to find.
Right, so but it kind of
I actually think there's something going on with the cabin in terms of being able to find it, because there's a couple of moments, and I didn't notice them the first time, but I noticed them the second time, where, like, people leave during the day, and when they get to the cabin, it's nighttime.
Night. Yeah.
But there's a moment where you see the guy looking for the doctor looking for the cabin, and he's clearly lost.
And then
Jamie Lannister's wandering around. He even had his ghost brother point him in the direction, and he's wandering around till nighttime. And I think it's maybe hard to find. Like, maybe it's maybe there's something,
like a it's cloaked in some way from
right,
the right. And maybe the reason they were able to find it so easily the first time is because Mama wanted those girls.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's a good point actually. Is the cabin meant to be the same as this old psychiatric hospital that's not there anymore?
I don't think so. I think it
doesn't
was
seem like it.
I think it was her like her little house.
Because when I was looking on Wikipedia, I had a quick browse on Wikipedia, and it said that the doctor, when he goes off on his own, goes to the cabin. But I thought he went off to go to the psychiatric hospital that's closed down several years earlier. I thought, oh, that's obviously wrong. But
I think they keep referring to it by the name of the town. I think, yeah. But and the town has kind of a hospital-y sounding name.
It's like Clifton Forge, I think.
Yes, yeah. And I think that's the town, because they all talk about going to Clifton Forge.
Yeah, yeah.
Even people who don't know about the hospital stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I think, I mean, I don't know, but that's the impression that I got watching it the second time. I feel like I got more out of it the second time, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Because there are some, like, seeming plot holes that fill in a little bit the second time.
Okay.
But go ahead.
I think, like, overall, I think I really like it, but I think it suffers from having quite a few similar things to when we talked about the Woman in Black a few shows ago, how you can anticipate quite a lot of the scares and the storyline. Like, it's a very generic ghost story.
Right.
But I think they've put some very interesting ideas and very interesting characters into it, but I just feel like it's brought down a bit by being pretty generic overall. I don't know if you guys feel the same way or... Like the whole thing of an angry ghost and it's got unfinished business and you need to right the wrong and that kind of thing, and then there's an expert who goes off on his own looking and then gets taken out, and and the dad always gets taken out in the same sort of way, like the dad always ends up in hospital in these movies.
I mean, for me, I think there was enough like original stuff in it to make that not as big of an issue, but I think it would have been better if there had been a better ghost explanation, because you're right, they do that with every single ghost movie, and if there had been something more creative done for that explanation, I think it could have been even more effective. But the whole idea of Mama and the way the kids interact with her, I thought was original and interesting enough that it didn't bother me so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't notice this until the second time, but I thought it was quite a cool little misdirect that, because it would be easy to think that the mama ghost is their mother, because we learned
that's what I thought it was.
And I didn't really pick up on that until the second time, but they could have maybe done more with that, I thought, because it would be really easy to think that that's what it is, but they never really mentioned it again, that her mum and dad are both been killed. I thought it was quite cool, all the things with the glasses, with Victoria's glasses.
I was just going to say that. I love that part of the movie.
Yeah, and I wasn't really sure how to interpret it. I mean, either something like, because she takes them off at one point when Mama's there, and I thought, is that because she doesn't want to see Mama because she doesn't like the way she looks, or is it because when she was in the cabin with her for those years, her glasses were broken, so she could never see her, so maybe it's more comforting for her to see her in the way that she always knew. Like,
I also think the glasses are kind of an eye-opening metaphor, because you see her when she's in the hospital and she's like really feral, and then he gives her the glasses and she sees him and automatically starts connecting to her, like her past life and with people. Or is when she takes them off. I think she takes them off initially because, like you said, it's like a comfort thing as opposed to not like the way she looks.
And you see her without the glasses and with the glasses throughout the movie. Like, she takes them off quite a bit.
And I also think Mama takes the glasses off, too, because they represent sort of the way that Victoria has changed from the cabin. They're a metaphor, people! Metaphor!
Yeah.
That's the key word for today. Later on, there will be a really obvious metaphor when we get to Lords of Salem.
And also the way that Mama takes them off her and breaks them. And again, I thought, is that because she knows that she's really hideous looking and she thinks, oh, it's going to be more comforting for you to not see me this way, or just to remind her of the way things were before?
I thought it was sort of because it separates her from Mama in a way. Like, it's
like a way
to
kind of, I don't know, control the child by, like, in a really overbearing way, like a way that, I don't know, a parent might make their child sick or obese or something. So in a way to debilitate her deliberately, so that now you need to rely on me more because you can't see very well. I don't know.
Maybe that's interesting.
Yeah,
you could read into. I mean, there is a little bit of a like Munchausen by proxy thing happening with Mama in this.
Yeah, definitely.
Um,
yeah,
Like, on one hand, she's a caregiver, but on the other, she's kind of a toxic one.
Yeah, just a tad.
Just a
little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, well, there again, just more generic things that you always get in ghost stories, like why Jaime Lannister goes, like, he has that dream about his brother, and then he goes to Clifton Forge for nothing to happen other than Annabelle to meet him there later. Right. When he, like, she rings him to say, oh, this is where I'm going, by the way, I'll see you there, and then he's there anyway, so I don't understand why he needed that bit other than to fill time, I guess. But it's a shame, because I think there's a lot of things that are really interesting in this film.
I think that, yeah, I think you're right. They had to get him out there, though, so that you could get the family shot.
Yeah. I think it would have been cooler, though, if they had done more with that, with the dream, with their father that Lucas has, you know, and him directing him to go out there.
I felt like that was the most heavy-handed part of the movie. Like,
it kind of was, when, but I'm just when saying, they were when put the, it in there,
the keyboard started saying, Mama, yes. I was like,
yeah,
really?
Terrible.
Really? I mean, I think... the second time I was like, okay, I get it. It's supposed to be the brother that's showing up, and so I guess he would know how to type. But I was just like, I don't think Mama's, like, fucking with the electricity so that she can be like,
no, it was him trying to tell him that something's going down, you know? It wasn't Mama doing it.
But still,
it.
Like, that to me was too much. I thought the vision of his brother, like, underneath the bridge, all, like, pointing, all insidious style, was creepy and interesting.
Right, that's what I'm saying. If they had done more with that dream and not just had him show up there, like,
he's so... sidelined in this movie anyway.
Very much. He's not that big of a part. They just sort of need him for
the story. This is a movie for lady agency. Like, you know what I mean? Like, anybody who has really anything, aside from the doctor, but even he gets totally neutered, you know, really quickly. Like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, and then he gets offed super fast when he finally figures shit out. And it's all about, like, Annabelle's journey and the girls and Mama. Like, and then even the big other, like, protagonist is female. Mm-hmm. This one's for the ladies.
Yeah,
but it's weird how the film starts off with the male story and the two brothers and everything, and the girlfriend character is kind of just like starts off as a side character really, and like the first time I saw this movie, I wasn't invested in her yet until like oh actually I've just realized she's got more screen time like now than the boyfriend character, and like I needed to sort of catch up and become invested in her.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it kind of makes sense in terms, like, because her investment definitely increases through the story.
The movie. Like, that part I don't think bothered me that much, because you get to see her become a bigger character, a bigger part of the girl's life, connect with them.
Yeah.
And that maybe was that's interesting, her journey.
Yeah, maybe it's deliberate, because the girls don't know anything about her either, and they get to know her more. Maybe that's the same for us as we're watching the film, we get to know her more as a character.
Right, and I think it definitely has more impact when she becomes the mother character. Like, you really see that she's, like, not signed up for this at all.
Yeah,
and is totally unprepared to take on a mothering role. Okay, so should we get into spoilers? Or I guess before we go into spoilers, I'll just say I did like this movie quite a bit. I agree with everything Jody said in terms of it being a generic ghost story. But if you like ghost stories, there's enough fresh, interesting things in this to elevate it to above something like, God, what's an example? There's been so many crappy, like, ghost stories since Paranormal Activity came out. I'm drawing a blank, but if you're a horror fan, you know there's been a bevy of them. And this one, I think, is one of the better ones because it gets atmosphere really good. The Mama character is pretty creepy visually.
The visuals are really good,
especially before you see a ton of her, like hints of her are really creepy. There's just sort of, the movie has a good sense of kind of dread and unease to it in general.
I think maybe they even overdid it on the Mama effects. I think it might have been better if she was a bit more subtle and you saw even less of her, because I guess it's the same for any other monster or ghost or anything, that the more you see, the less scary it becomes.
Right, and that's exactly what I said last night after we finished watching it, that she was so scary and I was, you know, jumping in certain scenes, and it had me really invested in the kids being... And Annabelle being so scared. But yeah, the more you see her, I think she definitely becomes less scary, but I understand sort of why they did it in order for the ending to go the way it did. You kind of, I don't know if there would have been a way to have her be less.
There's a little
visible.
Tonal shift that happens at the end.
Yeah,
we'll
definitely. And
about.
It, like we said, it became less horror and more fairy tale.
The part I think where I think Mama's the scariest is when she's under the bed.
Yes, when she's crawling into the mattress and then
she's like scraping her way into the mattress. I was like,
that
oh,
was
fuck.
Really creepy.
Very creepy.
And just the girl standing there looking at Annabelle, and Annabelle's like, what's going on? And then she realizes, is there something under the bed?
Well, and this is after you've had like the first person shooter view, like view of her story with her, like her. It totally reminded me of like a Fallout or something, like when you're fighting melee.
Yeah.
Like, all you see are like awkward arms. Like,
yeah,
and she's like killing off nuns with knitting needles. Okay, so where was I? Okay, so should we talk about the end?
Yeah.
All right, sure. So. They go up to the cabin. She meets up with Jaime Lannister, and she's like, "Oh God, we gotta go up to the cliff." And the cliff is where she had jumped off with her baby back in the day. And she's got baby bones in her bag because she's gonna like right the wrong that
right.
That
Annabelle realizes that needs to happen.
Yeah, so she heads up there, and Mama's like ready to take the girls off the cliff. She's like prepping them, putting like little wreaths on their heads, and is gonna lead them off the cliff. And they're able to stop her temporarily. You know, she attacks the dad and sidelines him again immediately. Gives him like a heart attack.
Right.
And so Annabelle gives her the bones of the baby. And there's this quiet moment where Helvetia takes the baby and she like opens it, and like you see her face go from like dark and evil to like light. I mean, she's scary looking anyway, but like you see this, like, you know, her as a human, and the baby, you can see it's a baby. And she's remembering jumping off the cliff. What had happened was the baby had gotten hooked on a branch on the way down. Even though it died, it didn't like plummet all the way to the ground with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, oh, okay, here's the cookie cutter ending. Like, someone call Spielberg.
Right.
We're getting like the happy ending.
Yeah.
She's gonna
and
jump
this
off
is
with
where
the
I think the movie has some fucking balls.
Yeah. Definitely.
So what ends up happening is they start to try to take the girls away, and the little one, Lily, starts screaming out for Mama. And one of the things that happens throughout the runtime of the movie is that when the girls get scared and start yelling, Mama comes in and attacks to protect them.
Has that Mama Bear instinct.
Yes.
Definitely.
She goes full on ghost Mama Bear. And so. And I actually thought this was a great scene. She turns her, she like turns evil again. She turns around and like tosses the baby bones over her shoulder.
Yeah, the bones just like split apart.
I know.
Like,
she's like, no, don't want them.
Yeah, like
I want
fuck
real
this
baby.
Baby,
yeah,
I want
the
real
baby.
Kid. So I thought that was kind of a nice little twisty twist right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so she grabs the girls and like keeps pushing Annabelle down, like sleep, like trying to make her stop so that she can take the girls off the cliff. But Annabelle like has that like maternal fire.
Yeah, she keeps fighting back.
She keeps like grabbing it at Victoria, and finally she grabs the little, you know, the tie for her robe.
Right.
And Victoria decides, you know, like she's to stay with Annabelle, and like splits them up. And Lily is like saying like, come, you know, Victoria, Mama, come. And she's like, no, Victoria, stay. And I'm such a wimp. I swear to God. I was like, I'm getting a little misty.
I know.
Yeah.
I was like, Victoria, get Lily. Like, don't let her go with Mama.
The girls are good in this movie.
Yeah,
that's part of the problem. So ultimately,
the kids are really good.
What happens is Victoria stays, and Mama like wraps her like ghost shroud around Victoria and then plummets to the water.
Lily.
And then they turn into moths and butterflies, and that's the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, now with that in mind, let's revisit some thoughts. I have to give it up to them for the ending. I think the ending's pretty ballsy. Like, it makes you, it's a sad ending, but you kind of got the idea that there was not that much hope for Lily, because she, like, okay, I know I talked a little bit about feral children, but one of the things that happens with feral children, this might be really, you probably know about this a little bit as a linguist, or maybe you'll think this is interesting, but like children who are like really young that are not socialized properly over extended periods of time actually lose the ability to fully comprehend language. Like they can learn words, but are never able to learn grammar. Mm-hmm. And so they can't really communicate. Like that part of the brain stops functioning.
Yeah, at a certain age, it becomes almost impossible to really pick up
that and kind of thing. Yeah. I kind of got the feeling that that's what the deal was with the little one. Mm-hmm. That she was just kind of... I mean, like, I'm sure they could have done something for her. But she was definitely... Her bond was to Mama far... Like, was far stronger to Mama than it was to any of the living people around her.
Right, like, Victoria has a much easier time connecting with Annabelle and, mm-hmm. and separating mm-hmm. herself from Mama, wearing, you know, normal clothing and taking care of herself, whereas Lily stays very feral. And every time she's with Mama, she's this bright, happy little girl. And she keeps
smiling
running
and laughing
from Annabelle. And, yeah. And then you see that at the end when she wraps her shroud around. They have that scene where you've got Mama, like, looking at Lily and Lily sort of with her baby face all joyful looking mm-hmm. at Mama, and it's like that's where she wanted to be.
So, like, mm-hmm. coming back to the whole idea of the diminishing returns in terms of her scariness, is I think at the end she's almost like she's not really the villain of the piece. Ultimately, mm-hmm. she's just like fiercely maternalistic
and misguided,
and it's like. And so by the end, I don't know that you're supposed to be afraid of her anymore instead of in so much as maybe feeling sad for her. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It definitely veers away from horror at the very end, despite the fact that it has a pretty dark ending.
Yeah.
What did you guys think? I've talked so much on this episode. You guys talk.
Yeah, I agree. And when we were just saying about how the rest of the film seems really generic, then like this ending just like comes out of nowhere, and you're right. going, "Oh shit! I didn't see that coming at all." And yeah, I think it is probably more of a sad ending than a scary ending. And if we're going to take the movie's explanation of, okay, in this universe, you know, Lily has had the harder time adjusting being younger, then it makes perfect sense that she would, as you say, want to be happy with Mama, because that's who she's bonded with, and that's who she's. You know, she's not going to adjust in that universe to real life. So, yeah, it is really sad. And it's like, you wonder what the ramifications are going to be for Victoria growing up, remembering all this, remembering
both
her parents and her sister. You know.
Yes. Although it seemed to calm her at the end when she saw the
butterfly. Because, yeah, throughout the movie, Mama's spirit is sort of preceded
moth.
By these big, scary-looking moths.
Which Lily actually eats at a certain point.
Yeah.
That was
so
an
gross.
Awesome scene and so gross. Where she's just, like, munching
well,
away.
Well, she's always, like, playing with them, too. Like, she's kind of, like pretending to feed them to the creepy-ass, like, apple doll. Mm-hmm. But, so, what Ariel was asking last night, she was like, does that mean that Lily's gonna start haunting her too? Like, what the fuck does that mean?
Or are they just, are now they like happy together?
I
and
think,
they're just
yeah, I think that was like a
away.
Good, I think that was Lily saying goodbye.
Yeah,
maybe?
I think
like,
you're probably right.
Like, she's gone, but not gone forever. Like, she's still, like, her spirit is still
part of nature.
Yeah, return to nature, I guess. Well, they actually, that kind of closes the whole idea, because remember the you know, like, Three Wolf t-shirt lady says that, like, if a body is left to the elements, it desiccates and twists and...
Right.
And then a spirit is an emotion, or a ghost is, like, an emotion that is desiccated and twisted and doomed to, repeat. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's, like, a return to nature. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what they're trying to say.
It could be.
I don't know. I might be reading too much into it. But yeah, overall, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, like I said, the ending came as a definite surprise. I didn't expect the movie to go in that direction, but I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was super, that part of it was really original. The Mama character was really interesting. The stuff with the feral kids was really cool and fascinating. I think there were enough really good scares, you know, to make the horror audience enjoy it. And the fairy tale stuff at the end was very Guillermo del Toro and really cool. And yeah. The images were
had
really
shades
effective.
Of Pan's Labyrinth ending.
Yes. Yeah. That. Really likes the long, skinny arms, too, doesn't
well,
he?
Well, I'm wondering, like, if I should look it up and see if the guy that plays the mama character is the same one that's in Rec.
Yes! I was going to ask that
I'm
last
looking
night
it up
and I
right
totally
now.
Forgot. Because yeah, it looks so much like the same person. Same body.
Let's see but, here.
Yeah. It is.
It's gotta be.
Oh, is it? Because it, like, what is going on with this dude? Someone needs to give him a cheeseburger.
I know.
Let's see here. Where's mama? Mama. Javier Botet. Botet.
Nope.
No, it is him.
It
you're
is?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Ariel, or Jody, you're right. That's totally him. So, okay.
Because I looked it up earlier because I thought it might be the same guy from Pan's Labyrinth with the eyeballs in his
right,
hand.
Right, right. That's what
that's,
I was thinking.
That's somebody else.
It's Doug.
The same
what's his face?
Long arm thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He likes.
Good for this guy.
Yeah, he's actually not bad looking in the picture.
Oh, you better stop it. You better
we'll
stop
not compare.
You need to get your groove on, girl, because that is not cute. Oh. You just unplugged your headphones. That's how excited you are about Javier.
No, I didn't mean he's like hot. I just meant
he's
not
making
like,
you want to take your pants off. Got it. I got it.
He's so creepy. Like,
oh,
I
I'm going to rewind this recording. You're like, he looks pretty good in that
video. I did not say it like
that. Abba. I wanted to wrap his spindly arms around me.
You're so mean. Ew, stop it.
Oh, Ariel, I love you. People are going to think I'm so mean to you, but I truly love you. So, okay, now, the one last thing I want to talk about before we move on to Lords of Salem is we picked this as the beginning of our motherhood horror. So I think we need to talk a little bit about why, like, how motherhood sort of plays into this, other than the obvious, like, mom, the fact that the character is mama. But I think that there are aspects of motherhood, and we touched on this a little bit with Munchkin by proxy. Jesus, I'm like an idiot.
It's about kids, get it? Munchkin.
Yeah, Munchkin, exactly. But, like, how there's, like, a darker side to, like,
right.
motherhood, and, like, how... Like
it can become twisted.
Yes, and like she's sort of like I said, sort of like the personified version of like that fierce, like how motherhood can be like lethal in terms of
yeah,
like being protective mm-hmm. or I don't know. It,
yeah,
I'm trying to figure
really
out how to say this,
idea.
But I haven't
I mean,
had enough sleep to be able to be smart.
Can you guys hear me?
I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on that? Come back to me. My brain's functioning again.
Can we hear
Did
Jody?
We lose Jody? I think... Can you hear us?
I think we lost her.
Can you hear... I can't... Wait, hold on. I just heard something. Say something.
Hello, can you hear
yes,
me?
Yes, now we can. Have
oh,
you been talking and we're just talking over you?
Sorry.
I'm so
yeah,
sorry.
You're doing that thing again where you're being really rude and just talking over me.
Sorry.
Fucking Americans.
Such assholes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, we mentioned that that... Mama is being really protective and caring over the children, but so protective and caring that she wants to kind of debilitate them so that she can care for them even more by
right.
just feeding them this one thing, you know, and having them having the kids tied into her so that they never leave her.
Right, it's only her. She doesn't want them to connect to anything else but her.
Yeah, yeah. And in the end, she gets what she wants because Lily
yeah.
is so connected and so dependent on her that she can't adapt to anything else and she doesn't want to go with Annabelle. Who's the real, you know, mother figure and
mm-hmm.
she learns to love them and she's providing for them and taking care of them, but it's still mama that she wants because she can't ever break that connection.
Definitely. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so that's just what she was going for, both of them, Lily and mama.
Yep, definitely. The other side of that is then you have Annabelle who, like mama, all she wants is to be a mother. Like she ended up dead because she went and like killed people to get her kid back.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is her ultimate drive is to be a mother. Whereas Annabelle, that's the furthest thing from what she wants. And she sort of has motherhood thrust upon her.
Right. She has to grow into that role.
What I thought was interesting though, is typically in movies, someone who doesn't want to be mother is, or fall into that role is really like villainized.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think she's treated somewhat sympathetically in terms of, like, she's not the villain of the piece. She's actually the person that you're kind of identifying with and going with. And you can understand, to a certain degree, why she's so reluctant to step into this role of these kids that, I mean, she's not even related to them.
Yeah.
And have to take on that mother role and really struggles with it. Like, it doesn't, like, it just comes naturally to her because she's a woman. But she ends up ultimately really kind of loving the girls, especially Victoria. And you see that fierce motherhood finally coming out of her at the very end of the movie.
Which I think is a cool thing to touch on in a movie, because I mean, women, not all women are naturally born with that mothering instinct and the want to have children, and to have that shown, that, you know, like in the beginning, she doesn't want them to call her mom. I mean, she doesn't know why they're saying mama, but you know, she thinks they're trying to call her mom, and she's really harsh about telling them.
She's like, no, don't call me that.
And
which is what I would totally say. I was like, oh girl, I feel you.
And then she continues to be pretty harsh and kind of pushes them away for a while until she starts to, you know, grow.
Yeah, she's almost sort of antagonistic in some spots. I mean, they don't play it up too much, but the bit when Jamie Lannister is in the hospital and it's just her and the girls, and she's like, well, it's just us, you know, I don't like it any more than you do, but we don't really have a choice here. Which made me wonder why she had kind of agreed in the first place. I think maybe they could have done a little bit more to show maybe how close they were as a couple, and that she, like, that's how far she would go to be with him.
Right.
Maybe. Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you're right, because you see a lot of her making sacrifices and seeing unhappiness, but you don't really see how much she really loves him.
Yeah,
that could probably have strengthened the character. They just
sort of have her tell her friend that...
Her friend, who's like the worst friend ever.
Yeah.
Who was like so obnoxious. Like, you're in a rock band.
Yeah.
Like, please stop it immediately.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting how, like, oftentimes you see in a film like this, maybe you see a woman who can't have children and really wants them and is trying really hard to be a mother, whereas this is the opposite. You know, she's never wanted it. And she's actively, you know, like we see her at the very beginning, like, oh, hooray, I'm not pregnant, you know, at the very start. And how her as a character at first is maybe kind of destructive. I mean, if you think of she's playing a pretty typical sort of metal rock chick, you know, she's got tattoos and everything and short hair and, you know, she's in a rock band. And how she has to become the maternal figure, whereas the mama character, as we've said, is supposed to be protective and nourishing, but then she's ultimately being the destructive one at the end. So how they kind of, I don't know, mirror each other.
And sort of like switch, at one point their roles swap.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what I think drives Mama to that thing where you have the confrontation at the end, where, like, now as Annabelle steps into the role of mother, like, Mama wasn't really that worried about her while the kids weren't bonding with her. But as soon as that role started switching,
that's when she
kicked in crazy.
Yeah.
And we saw the world's scariest killer weave attacking people. Right. weave tumbleweed.
When the hair is like skittering across the
ground.
Did it make you think of that Halloween Simpsons where Homer gets possessed by Snake's hair?
Yes!
I hadn't seen that, but that's hilarious. I just thought of, like, I was like, why is that weave, like, cruising along the floor? You know, like, it just looks like a tumbleweed, like, from a fight or something in the hood, you know?
Good times.
Okay, so what do you think? Do you feel like we've touched on this enough?
Yeah.
We can move on to our next reluctant mother?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm looking forward to seeing how you feel about this morning, because you looked completely, like, shell-shocked last night.
I was a little bit.
I saw it with Ariel for the second time last night. I watched it without her the first time. So I had already kind of gone through that, and so I got to, like, and my favorite part is, well, like, turn to her in the theater and watch her face, which was enjoyable. Okay, so, Lords of Salem. I'm going to do the synopsis a little differently here, because this movie is so fucking all over the place. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, so Lords of Salem, this movie is currently on limited release in theaters. I would recommend checking it out if you get a chance, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
It is the latest by everyone's favorite director, Rob Zombie. And it's shockingly stars his wife, Sherry Moon Zombie, making her film debut. Just kidding. So the movie takes place in Salem, Massachusetts, which of course is notorious for the Salem witch trials that happened back in the, you know, buckle shoe and top hat era. I don't know, the pilgrimy times. That's a historically accurate description,
yes,
by the way.
Of course it is.
The movie starts with a flashback to witchy times, where Margaret Mead is leading her coven of witches, and there is a guy named Reverend John Hawthorne who is vowing to kill the witches and put an end to, like, the whole satanic crew. And we see them, like, getting naked and giving their bodies to Satan and dancing around the fire. Then the movie flash forward to our main character, who's played by Sherry Moon Zombie. Her name is Heidi. Heidi LaRocque. But mm-hmm. that's, like, her kind of, like, stage, I don't know, her radio name, I guess. She is she has white lady dreads, which are very unfortunate.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, I have yet to see a white lady dread that I was on board for.
They're usually pretty horrific.
I'm not into that. Like, if you're, that's, like, not a part of that. Like, there's cultural appropriation that you can kind of get behind a little bit.
Not that one.
No. So white ladies thinking about dreading your hair, just don't do it. That's my public service for today. Okay. She is, like I said, she's Heidi LaRocque. She is a radio DJ along with the two Hermans, Herman Whitey and Herman Jackson, played by the, iconic Ken Foray. Mm-hmm. In a very unfortunate toupee, which I'm glad they actually addressed.
I know. I was worried that they weren't going to talk about it. I was like, is that supposed to be a good toupee?
Yes.
Yeah, they're talking about how bad it is without the character. And I was like, is this, like, did he know that that scene was in there?
It's like, so watch, it was like actually Ken Foray. So he was like, I'm going
to. That was the way they decided to tell him because they couldn't talk to him about it in person.
I also think it's important to say that we are introduced to Heidi's character while she's booty butt naked.
Yeah.
Wearing nothing but thigh highs.
So I was like, that's what I do. I sleep all the time, butt naked with thigh high socks.
But I don't know. I kind of think it's sweet how, like, much Rob Zombie, like, clearly thinks his wife is super fucking hot.
Mm-hmm.
And is like, everybody check out that ass.
Yeah. Over and over again.
Over and over again. Okay, so, well, we get a little piece of her life. She's pretty happy. Later on you find out she's an ex-drug addict, but she seems to have her shit together. She's got the most popular radio show in Salem and really good friendships with her DJs, especially Herman Whitey, who you kind of get a sense that there's a budding romance there. Like, maybe they're holding back for professional reasons, but there's mm-hmm. definitely, like, chemistry there. Mm-hmm. One morning she steps up to get her paper and she looks down the hall, like the creepiest fucking hall ever. And there's, like, a shadowy figure in the doorway for apartment number 5. And she tries to introduce herself and the person slams the door in her face. And she mentions it to her landlord, who's, like, this older, English lady.
I love that actress.
Too. Yes. Who says, no, I didn't rent that out. I'll look into it if it'll make you feel better. That night on the show, they have a guest on, who's this guy, Francis Mathias, who has written a book on, like, witches and Satanism, and they have a conversation about, like, are Satanists real, or witches real, and he's like, you know, he says, no, they're not real, and only 25 people died in the witch trials. Oh, and there's also another awesome guest, Count Gorgon, who is, like, a black metal dude.
Yeah.
And he's like, we serve the goat. We are the goat. The goat does not follow the pig who is God. And, like, you get, like, this whole, like, rant. And I was just like, yeah, squeezing invisible oranges. And it was awesome.
So if you don't know what that is, it's like where you hold your hand up and like make the ha thing. Like you're squeezing an invisible orange. that night she also, or I guess I'm getting ahead of myself because it's the next time in the show that Matthias is there, because she gets that after the show, somebody has sent her this like creepy wooden box with a record inside from a band called The Lords. Mm-hmm. When she gets home and they put the record on, like she immediately goes into like this weird trance state, and it's like this creepy sort of, I don't know how to describe the music. How would you describe it?
I don't know. I mean, it's really repetitive and...
But it's I kind of halfway described it as, like, really poorly as doom metal-esque, and it's not totally that way.
Jody, how would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say doom, but it's more noise than music, though. I mean, but yeah. Then I guess a lot of metal could be described.
right.
It's like, I don't know, Black Death, doom, like, it's, yeah, just... If you can imagine what doom would sound like, that's how it sounds.
Right. I think it's actually lyrics. It's just them.
If you listen to something like Anathema or Paradise Lost, or like, that's how it would sound in like the really old, doom metal, I guess.
Yeah, it's very like low and bass heavy, and I think it does a really good job of right away putting you, like giving you that sense of unease. Like it feels kind of evil.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a good job with the music there.
Yeah. And it has like this immediate effect on her. And they decide that they're going to play it at their smash and trash thing where they put a record on and then like people can like say whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. So she plays it, and when she plays it, Matthias is completely freaked out by it. And she's like, oh, turn it down. That gives me a headache. But it goes out over the airwaves still, and what you see is that it starts affecting the women in town. They also sort of go into a trance-like state. I was expecting them to go, like, Pontypool style and start killing people, but they just sort of, like, stand there and listen, like yeah, just kind of sort of enthralled. And that kind of, at this point, things start really kind of going poorly for Heidi. She starts melting down. Like, she is tired all the time. She starts seeing really creepy shit. Like, she has a vision where, like, she goes into a church and, like, this priest, like, makes her give him head. Which I looked over at Ariel and she looked like she was just about fucking done with the movie. Yeah. She starts seeing people with like burnt up, ashy looking faces. I'd never really seen that before. I thought that was an interesting effect. It's like their face is, it's almost like when you see like old burnt up charcoal or something. Mm-hmm. Like you can see the shape, like it looked a little like when you see the ash people of Mount Vesuvius, you know what I mean? Like, you can still see the outline of the face.
Right.
But it's all cracked and ashy. I don't know how to describe it. But it doesn't look like someone's put ash on their face. It's like...
It's kind of like, I don't know, like mummified and dusty.
Yeah, like they have cheesecloth over their face and then ash or something.
Yeah, it's really creepy looking. Who's like walking a goat. And she also starts spending time with the landlord and her two quote-unquote sisters, which are like a couple of... One of them is played by the divine Dee Wallace, and the other one is the actress who played Magenta in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're really sweet. They're like, we made you scones! And they seem really nice at first, but when she sits down... And one of them is a palm reader who starts telling her, like, this is the line of your fate and, you know, your brain and your hand are one on a metaphysical level. And then she starts talking about, like, you need to get in touch with your deepest desires. And I when Ariel was asking me to describe this movie to her, I was like, it's kind of cunty. And this is kind of where that sort of starts.
When she describes like the juices.
Yeah. Like... Yeah. Sorry, did I shock you, Jody?
No, not at all. there's one quote towards the end that I can't remember, but it's something about da 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 da, and then the juices from your legs, between your legs. And I'm like, oh wow, I can't remember the quote now. I'm just gonna try and find it.
Well, there's a bunch of times where they're like, I thought it was like there's like wall to wall badge talk in this movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because later on she's like talking about cunty witches and bleed us a king. So I should actually get to that part. So as she's sort of spiraling in this downward kind of trajectory, at one point she wakes up in the middle of the night and her dog has gotten outside the apartment. And she goes outside to let him in, and the door at the end of the hall is open. And there's someone in there. So she kind of like in a trance walks down there and she goes in and there's like a cross in front of her that looks, it's like almost like toaster elements. It's like giving off heat.
I know.
And yeah. And then there's like this like demon monster behind her, which is pretty creepy.
He looks like a Yeti.
He reminded me a little bit of the Yeti monster from Big Trouble Little China. you know what I'm talking about? The ones that ultimately on the end, like on the back of the Pork Chop Express at the end of the movie. I've seen that movie way too many times. Yeah, like... So I love that movie. That is fucking great movie.
I haven't seen it in a really long time.
You should revisit it. It holds up. It is still so good.
Okay.
It is awesome. Okay. So, and then when she comes out is when she's first, the first time she is confronted by Margaret Mead. Now, Margaret Mead has been hanging around, though. There's a couple moments where you see her in her apartment and Heidi is oblivious to her. Probably the best one is when she turns on the kitchen light and Margaret is sort of like floating in the corner, all merkined out.
Yeah, above the counter, completely naked and...
Well... Mm-hmm. Sand with her merkin.
Well, all right.
There's a
she's
there's
supposed to be
a large. There, like the merkin budget on this movie must have been astronomical. Like, that's where the money went. It went to like lobster hands and red dildos and
renting some
and merkins. So it sounds like I didn't like the movie, but there's just so much. It's like dazzle camouflage. Like you can't really take it all in. But she's like talking to her, like you get like right. I'm gonna be the only person that draws this conclusion. But she's like telling her, like, you know, smell the wind, and like getting all like, you know, earth mothery with her at first. And it reminded me a little bit of the witch in the 13th Warrior. Do you remember that movie?
Vaguely, but not
when when Bulbi like goes to the witch and her, he's like, "Warrior says the wind." Like, I was like, dude, what the fuck is the witch from 13th Warrior doing in this? Again, I see that movie too. When I lived in the trailer park, tonight's the trailer park talk. We had trailer visions. We had like three channels, and one of them was TNT, and they played 13th Warrior on motherfucking repeat.
Man, channels used to do that all the time.
So I have 13th Warrior memorized, basically. Like that and The World Is Not Enough. I hate that movie. Mm. And I know My First Name is Steven was on Lifetime quite a bit. But so like 13th Warrior was like the good one. I've seen it many times. But this is where you find it kind of start learning about the witchy agenda. She's like, bleed us a king, bleed us a king.
And she calls them the cunting daughters of Salem.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I like, Ariel's like, she like leads over to me. She's like, did he say lead us again? I'm like, no. You wish that's what she said. She said, bleed us a king. So,
That's going to be in the TV version.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Perfect for television.
My name's Buck, and I like to party. You know what we're talking about? The TV version of Kill Bill.
Oh.
So, like, my name's Buck, and I like to fuck. And, like, they actually had his alternate car that instead of saying Pussy Wagon said Party Wagon.
No,
I swear. It's true. Okay, so, let's see here. This is also where we learn a little bit more about Margaret Mead and her deal. We get a flashback to the witches and Matthias basically. Okay, so the witches are trying to clearly like create or like find a vessel for the spawn of Satan, and they have one girl who's in labor and they like cut her open, but like a baby, normal baby comes out and she's just like, she like licks it and she doesn't like the way it tastes. And so she starts spitting in the baby's face, you know, like you do. Good midwife.
Pretty standard operating procedure.
Yeah, you've done home births, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know about this.
That's what happens.
Okay. So the Reverend is able to, like, get a hold of them. They, like, puts her in, like, the full Hannibal Lecter suit, like, medieval version of the Hannibal Lecter suit. And he burns them, but she curses the descendants of all of the people from the original, like, Salem colony, that they will, their blood will fuel their resurrection, and that Matthias or Reverend Hawthorne's offspring will be the vessel for the second coming of Satan, and
right,
you know, the huge. So at this some of this is revealed because Matthias is doing research, and he, like, goes to the Reverend Hawthorne, like, the guy who's, like, a specialist on Reverend Hawthorne. He does some research, and he realizes, spoiler alert, not really, that Heidi is the descendant of Reverend Hawthorne.
Adelaide Hawthorne.
Yes. So, at this point now, Heidi is just totally fucked up, right? So she ends up getting back on, I think it might be heroin that she's smoking, because it looks kind of cracky, but her reaction is heroining, and I know you can smoke heroin, at least I think you can.
Yeah, I think so.
You want to weigh in on this?
It sounds like you'd know.
You would think, right? I believe that, you know, and it's the same kind of thing with the, you know, crack pipe or whatever. And the, you know, the nice witches downstairs end up coming upstairs, and they brought her scones and are ready to take care of her with some tea, and after she's all sleepy from drinking carmine tea, they put her in, like, a wheelchair and take her to the end of the hall where they, like, you know, they do the same sort of ceremony that was done, with minus the, like, naked dancing, at the end of the hall in front of the door 5. So they stand her up and they push her through, and now it's not a dark room with, like, a cross toaster. It's actually opens up into this, like, really beautiful,
yeah,
golden cathedral-y looking place.
It's gorgeous, and this, yeah, just Baroque gold, red, yeah, columns. Mm-hmm. It's really cool looking.
And she's got the, like, Dia de los Muertos makeup that you see, like, on the
or
poster.
The juggalo makeup.
Oh, yes, I know. She's like, oh god, she's a juggalo. You know what a juggalo is, right, Exploded Joe?
Yeah, we had this discussion already on your show before.
Oh, really? Oh, yes, Jesus. I gotta forward you over this thing. It's like a Tumblr of juggalo, okay, Cupid people, who are juggalos, and they are some scary peeps. Sorry to the juggalos in the audience, but the people representing you, at least on OKCupid, are not very flattering. There's, like, some of them are like, you know, like, what can you not do without? And they're like, it's a couple, and they're like, our car, because that's where we live. And that's why CPS keeps taking away our kids. We met at a Juggalo concert, had sex in the bathroom. Also, we can't live without selling plasma, and we're looking for people who want to hook up. Like, I was like, yeah, that's really appealing. I'll forward it over to you. You'll enjoy it. And then you can see my soulmate who's good at cat stuff.
Cat stuff?
Yeah, quote unquote. What are you, it says, like, what are you really good at? It says cat stuff. I don't know what that means, but I'm in. So she goes in, and this is where the movie really starts getting fucking cray cray. She goes in, and there's, like, a lobster man. Like, he's, like, a little person who has, like, lobster claw hands and, like, 2 umbilical cord penises that she holds and, like, shakes around and goes mm-hmm. crazy with for a minute.
I just, like, when this happened, I just looked over at Rachel, and I was like, what the fuck? What just happened?
I was like, stay with it. It's weirder.
I mean, just the way she's holding those.
It kind of robs the movie of, like, there's, like, a little bit of creepy gravity to this moment until she starts, like, shake weighting them, and I'm like, oh dear. Any thoughts on that particular scene, Exploding Joe?
Not really. I mean, yeah, it was weird, and it was kind of crazy, but it all kind of doesn't make sense, but it fits. What else is going
right.
on, I guess?
Yes. So she comes out of the room after shake-weighting the double umbilical penises and a sentence that I'm sure you use in everyday life. is taken back to her house. The movie at this point kind of... I mean, there's a couple of scenes we got to talk about before we go into the final and
maybe we'll do a spoiler warning. Although I'm spoiling the movie anyway. The Matthias character, once he figures out that she is the descendant of Reverend Hawthorne, comes to the apartment looking for her, and she's all cracked out upstairs. But he's intercepted by the landlord, who's like, "Oh, you're friends with Heidi? Why don't you? Cause she's not here. Why don't you come in for a minute?" So he comes in and sits down for tea with her and the other two witchy ladies, and they start like having a conversation. This is maybe my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
That he is not catching the subtext on at all, and it starts off very like friendly, and they're kind of like jovial, like talking about Heidi and witches and whatever, and it just kind of takes a left on him at a certain point. Like they're being really friendly, where they're like, "So, are you married? Is your wife a local girl?" And when he says no, she's Venezuelan. Like clearly, she's not under the spell of the record. "Oh, do you have any children?" Like trying to find out if maybe he has a daughter, because he is a lifer of Salem. Like, he's been in there his whole life, which is important at the end of the movie. But once they find out that he has, once they find out everything they need to know about him, they start to kind of go sideways a little bit. Like, they start talking about, like, cunting witches and...
Yeah, and, okay, this is one of the quotes.
Go ahead.
"Stick your nosy cock inside her head and fuck her brain."
Yes. I think you want our Heidi so that you can... Like you said. So, and at this point, he, like, tries to make an exit, and D. Wallace shows up and basically beats him to death with a frying pan.
Yep.
And I don't know why I like this scene so much, but, like, she hits him in the head, and they're like, "Good job." She's like, "It felt good."
I know. And just the way when he's, like, dead on the floor, they're just, like, sitting around drinking tea, talking.
Well, they're like, "Oh, what a waste of a good man. Would anyone like a pot of tea?"
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's awesome. I kind of wish there was an alternate cut of this movie that was, like, strictly from their perspective.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so that happens, and then Whitey shows up to pick her up, because the Lords of Salem are playing for one night only. It's a special, concert or whatever, and he shows up to pick her up, and like the witches are all like on the stairs kind of blocking his way, like questioning him as he goes up the stairs.
We get another unnecessary ass shot.
Oh right, yes. The most gratuitous ridiculous
her
ass shot.
Shorts have just like fallen down.
She's all cracked out laying down. It's like Rob Zombie like jumped into the scene for a second, like pulled him down a little bit, and then was like, "Okay, perfect." In case you forgot, that's what my wife's ass looks like. And in this movie, she's like all tatted up.
Yeah, like, cool tats.
Yeah, especially how she has, like, the Sacred Heart on her chest, which is rad. Also, she has a dress that I want to, like, rip off her body and put on
really
mine.
Cool.
But that's totally, I'm off track now. So he scoops her up, and they head to the concert, and this is sort of where the movie wraps up. I'm going to just go ahead and spoil this now, and then we can, breaking it up. So she goes into, she tricks both the Hermans, traps them outside, and she goes into the theater where the three witches are now on stage. And it's a great shot of her. She's like up in the balcony, and the way the light is behind her, it creates like a halo around her head.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's actually like a circle in the architecture of the balcony that also like kind of is also a halo.
Yeah.
The three witches are on stage, and they're joined by Margaret Mead and the original coven, and we get like this whole like barrage of bizarre visuals, like her in slow motion riding the back of a goat, which I was like, metaphor alert, get it? She's riding the goat.
Yeah.
And like weird priests with like ashy faces
and
like jerking off
dildos.
Giant red dildos and like Jesus, like faces of like Jesus and different like demons and stuff, or like Asian demons turning into like regular demons. What else?
Yeah, and there's stuff melting, and
she's like in a room, like this really cool, another cool like gold room where she's sitting on like this lit bed. There's just like a whole, and then, oh, there's one of the best visuals in the entire movie happens here, where, but coming towards her down the hall is like an ashy Pope surrounded by like naked women with like these black animal masks on.
Yeah,
and
I have
to say, the body diversity in this movie is kind of surprising. Like, it's not all like lithe, perfect bodied people. Like, it's a very broad sort of spectrum of bodies.
I thought those were the women in the audience that got undressed, right?
So, and in the audience, there's like a smattering of kind of people. And
were obviously like the women who were in trances. Yes.
Well, Margaret Mead very vividly explains who they are in the audience, that she can smell the rotting flesh of all of their their ancestors and the folds between their legs.
Yeah. I'm like, I was trying to remember.
I'm like, got it. Enough vagina talk. And then we see Heidi, and she's basically, now she's kind of like in hell almost. And they lay her down on this bed, this like fur lined bed, and like rub their crazy witch hands all over her. And we see her bleed them a king.
Yeah,
like she's kind of crying, and then there's like a river of blood coming between her legs, between you and Randy. Like, I didn't know who was more upset by this visual.
And them like rubbing their hands through the blood and rubbing it on her and on themselves, and
yes,
yeah.
And then like she gives birth to this like tentacle monster, like the root baby is what I think it was being called. And the closing shot of the movie it pans from top down of Heidi, and now her eyes are all white, and she's got like a crown on, and she's sort of like the Blessed Virgin Mary a little bit, sort of like the Antichrist equivalent of that.
Yeah, and then it pans down,
and she's standing on like a mound of dead women.
Yeah, all the
like
audience
all
members.
The audience are like nude and dead in front of like at her feet.
It's a pretty cool
and
visual.
You get some audio, like you get like a radio news report over it that there's been a mass suicide at this event, and Heidi LaRocque is MIA, and that's basically the end of the movie.
Yeah, and then you see her like running through the park, happy with her dog.
Yeah,
that for a second too.
I'm not really sure what the. I'm sure there's some purpose to it, but I don't quite understand it. Maybe just to remind you where it all began, and sort of like as a haunting visual of, you know,
what she used to be.
Right. Yeah. All right. So, thoughts. Who would like to go first?
What the fuck was up with this movie?
All right, go for it, Jody.
You know what? I really like this movie. I didn't know what to expect. It's not really like any of his other movies. I haven't. I've not seen all of them. I mean, I didn't like Halloween. And House of a Thousand Corpses is okay as a, you know, music video. But this, I thought, at least the first kind of, I don't know, half an hour, felt really, I don't know, restrained and sort of like held back and not all frenetic and crazy like his other films have been. There was a lot of influences from other movies, though, I noticed. I mean, I'm getting like The Shining, Stigmata, Day of Wrath, Maniac, Antichrist, a little Hocus Pocus with the three sisters.
Nice.
And The Fly, you know, that bit with the birthing scene, and there's a similar sort of nightmarish scene where she's having a hallucination that she's getting like a baby intestine thing pulled out of her and stuff. But it all, I don't know, comes together in this crazy, it's kind of a mess of a movie, really, but I really liked the experience. I mean, liked is a funny word, but in the same way I liked Antichrist and Maniac and those other films, I liked this too. It's kind of hard to explain, but it all worked for me.
I'm totally with you on this. I don't have any Rob Zombie baggage because I have not really seen his other movies, and I don't hate him, and I'm not like, oh my, I mean, back in the day I liked White Zombie, I guess, you know, like, but I'm not like, I don't have any baggage, you know, like I was able to kind of see this with fresh eyes, and I really liked this movie, and I've gotten shit for it, but I think there's lots, I mean, it's totally his ode to Italian horror,
But like, I think you, the whole thing with The Shining, like, I definitely got a Kubrick vibe. Some of the tracking shots in that hallway.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. And some of those scenes with the ladies with the masks was very Eyes Wide Shut as well. With all the, like, the grand buildings and the music.
Fidelio.
I mean, I love the use of music in this film as well, like all the different types of stuff they're playing on the radio, and then, like, you know, you've got Mozart's Requiem playing in the big hall and everything like that. It's pretty good. I mean, I think to use the term, like, matured as a filmmaker, I think is overused, and I don't think that's quite the case, because there's still all this, you know, vagina stuff going on, and
you can you get touches of him in the dialogue. You're like, oh, that was a Rob Zombie moment.
Exactly, yeah. But I think, I mean, it's the best movie of his that I've ever seen. I definitely enjoyed it more than the other ones of his.
Yep, I definitely agree. I think, well, I think that his aesthetic lends itself really well to this movie. Like, he does, like, visual stuff really interestingly, and he was able to really kind of, like you said, the beginning is very restrained, and then he's able to just go completely apeshit at the end and, like, let it all go. And in this, in this sort of film, that totally makes sense.
Yeah,
that it can be a, like a, like a crazy rock video at the end and not ruin the movie.
Yeah, that's right. Because something like House of a Thousand Corpses, that's all it is. It's all just crazy visuals, and, you know, it just feels like a 90-minute music video.
Right.
Whereas this, you know, has that as well, but I think there's a lot more to it.
Definitely.
Maybe not. Well, maybe not a lot more to it, but it just felt like that it had some substance, which is really interesting. I think the subject matter is really interesting. You know, witches and things like that. Is it just worked for me, I guess, with the metal and the tattoos and the witches. And
the witches are great. Like, Meg Foster. I don't know if you know the name Meg Foster, but if you've seen the movie They Live, have you seen that?
No, haven't.
Well, for those of you who have, there's, like, a woman in it that has, like, these, like, crazy blue eyes and red hair, and she's really striking looking. This, she plays this, she commits to this character.
Yeah.
She looks so scary and, like, emaciated, and she fucking sells that dialogue, which, if it, if you don't sell the kind of dialogue that she's doing,
oh,
it is, like,
ridiculous.
Oh, it'd be so bad. But the way that she, her delivery of these lines that are terrible, and other people's hands, really, I think, are effective and good in her. Like, she does a good job. Margaret Mead is a great, creepy character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
totally
I love
agree.
The Three Crones. And I was saying to Ariel, I was like, I don't know what it says about my future that, like, the characters I most enjoy in this movie are the Three Crones.
The ones that are just drinking really wine the whole time.
Yes, yeah. They're awesome.
They were really enjoyable and quirky and interesting.
Also, I think there's something about agency that maybe makes me like them more. Like, we have our main character, but she never has a survivor girl movie throughout the entire runtime of the movie. She has, like, zero agency.
Yeah, whereas other people are taking care of her the whole time, or leading her, or guiding her, or pushing her, you know?
Yeah, and these ladies have an agenda, and they, like, go to work, and they get their job done. At the end, you see their, like, adoring faces as they stare up upon her. And and so, like, that's why they're almost, like, yeah, they're the bad guys, but they're kind of, like,
likeable. I mean,
well, they're the driving force of this movie, you know what I mean? Like, I enjoy the Crones quite a bit, and I like their interaction a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of all the interactions that people have, I would say this and the in the radio station are probably the best interactions that are happening in the movies. But, like, them, like, you kind of buy that they have a sisterhood.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean,
there's a little bit of adversarial in it, but at the same time, like, they're clearly on the same team.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of, like, cut each other down a little bit here and there, and criticize each other, but in, like, a
bicker almost.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I really liked the witches quite a bit. Yeah. I'm so glad you liked this, Jody. I thought I was gonna be alone. Now, what about you? Did you? I know you're not as into this movie as I was.
I'm not as into it as you are. Now, I haven't seen a bunch of Rob Zombie films either, even though I'm apparently, like, the resident.
You're the fan.
Of Rob
Everyone
Zombie.
Knows Ariel likes Rob
ever
Zombie.
Ever seen the first Halloween movie that he did? And,
Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects. Thank you. I just lost that. Those are the only ones I saw. I didn't like Devil's Rejects. And, you know, Halloween, there are parts of that that I enjoy. Definitely enjoy it. So apparently that's where I get this reputation. It is not deserved.
Yeah, right.
So this movie, there are parts that I really liked. Like we were talking about, I really liked the witches, both the modern witches and the Salem original witches. I thought they were really interesting and really cool. There were a lot of really fascinating visuals that were done really well. You know, they weren't cheesy or like poorly put together, you know, they were mm-hmm. done very well. But I kind of felt by the time the movie was over, like my senses had been assaulted or something.
Yeah. You know? I feel like I've been assaulted.
Yeah. And
yeah.
And I kind of like now looking back on it, I sort of almost like that a little bit. I don't think I would put myself through, I don't know. I'd put myself through the experience again, but Heidi is going through that too, right? She's slowly going crazy, sort of seeing mm-hmm. all of these things happening around her. Is she, you know, is she really seeing these? What's going on? She doesn't really know. And you kind of go through that with her too, because you don't really know what these images are that are popping up and what they mean. I mean, you know some of it, obviously, but not all of it. Like, what does the tentacle do? Do you know?
And yeah.
there's stuff you don't really understand.
Forearm fitness.
And the way it's just like assault your brain the kind of way it does her was interesting.
I just feel like the theaters are full of, like, we talked about generic ghost stories.
Oh yeah, totally.
That
yeah.
you, I mean, you know, original, safe, really kind of, you know, predictable films. Mm-hmm. And this one is none of those things.
Oh yeah.
Even if you didn't like it, it made you fucking feel something.
Yeah, and it makes you think about it, and it definitely was original, and I can appreciate that. I mean, like I said, I the way you were describing it, and when I first started watching it, I thought I was going to really, really dislike it. But by the end, I just... I don't know if enjoy is the right word, because I don't know that I really enjoyed it in the way I would normally use that word, but I found it really interesting and I'm glad I saw it.
I have to say I enjoyed it the first time and I enjoyed it even more the second time, because for one mm-hmm. thing it felt, you know what I mean, like you get more out of something the second time you see it.
Sure.
But I also got the added joy of watching you watch it. So like when I knew the good shit was coming up, I totally was side eye and you're like, here it comes. And when like Lobster Dude came out with the tentacles, I was like, oh yes. I was like, this is where shit starts getting weird. You're like, starts. But yeah, I liked it. I don't know. Okay, so should we talk about how motherhood like plays a role in this?
Sure.
Well, to me, the reason I included it, aside from just sort of the obvious, like, bleed us a king thing, mm-hmm. was I think that the horror part of that, like, the is the idea of non-consensual motherhood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, there is definitely, I don't know if, I would say that it, like, conception from rape. It's definitely, yeah. there's, like, metaphors around that.
Right, and it's different than something like Rosemary's Baby, where she had wanted to be pregnant. It turns out differently than right, she had intended, right. but she wanted that pregnancy.
Also, mm-hmm. the parasitic kind of aspect of pregnancy gets mm-hmm. touched on, I think, as well as, you know, like, the horror aspect of childbirth and all of the, like, blood and viscera that goes along with pushing out a baby. So those are the kind of the reasons I thought that this fit. What are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely think that it fits for those reasons. And the, like you were saying, the kind of, the crones in it, you know, you always have
the mother or the childless crones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yes. You actually, that's interesting. You do kind of get the crone, the mother, the virgin and mm-hmm. the whore kind of, mm-hmm. This is another, like, super lady-centric movie, I think.
Yeah. And yeah. and like I said, I really, the part that I enjoyed the most probably were the witches in it. And
the hocus-pocus aspects.
Yeah. That, and then even the
you're like, this could have used a lot more Bette Midler. Yes.
More Bette Midler.
How about you? To bust into song.
Yeah. How about you? Singing,
I put a spell on you.
Oh, my goodness. I'm surprised that wasn't yeah. in the freaking playlist on this movie. Now that you say that, Jesus. Yeah.
I don't know that it's something I would have necessarily picked up on that much if I didn't know that we were watching it for a motherhood in horror themed podcast here. But the things that you were talking about, like unwilling motherhood and as a result of rape and that kind of thing, that comes across quite a lot. But also the fact that when they get that one baby and it's like, oh, this isn't the right one, and you know, mm-hmm. they nick it and no, this isn't good, and just toss it out, and you think, oh, okay, so you've gone through that whole process and it's not even like you haven't even birthed the Antichrist, or like, great, right. That was just a waste of time. And talking about women as vessels, and that's kind of like that's their only worth, yeah. in some way. And that, I think, maybe that hits. I mean, we've said, you know, like none of us have kids, and maybe part of that is why that we don't want to be seen as just vessels for, you know, spawning more humans. I don't know. Right. I don't know if that is anything that touched the nerve with you guys at all, or.
Well, I mean, that's definitely. I mean, I'm very ambivalent at the idea of motherhood, and I am totally like not ambivalent. Very sure that childbirth is not my jam. It's just not for me. I do think that there is a real divide in this movie between women. Between mothers and doers, mm-hmm. you know, like the witches who are not mothers and who, like, they even talk about how children are, like, one of them talks about the how children are mostly a waste.
Right, and yeah. you even see, like, the baby that they throw away, they show you later it with its, like, head bashed in, yeah. you know, it was a waste, it wasn't what they wanted, so they bashed yeah. it.
I thought there were some really compelling visuals around, like, childbirth and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because, like, and I always think it's so interesting that, like, people think, like, horror is for men. But, like, I mean, as a woman, you see a lot more blood than dudes do.
Yeah.
Like, not to get super graphic, but I mean, like, we're, especially with things like childbirth and stuff like that, like, we have a very visceral experience just in life. I mean, you get used to it because it's just part of life. But,
yeah, it's part of what you go through.
But, I mean, being a lady is a pretty bloody affair.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know how that necessarily yeah. ties into the theme of this. No, but I'm
been
always
a
struck
coach for,
by
like,
that.
Two births, and there's a lot of stuff that comes with that.
Oh! Oh!
Stuff.
Stuff.
But, I mean, pregnancy is that sort of mix of, like, really... kind of horrifying and bloody and gory, and then something really beautiful.
And parasitical.
Yeah, but then something really beautiful, too, if you've ever been there for a birth. It's
motherhood horror. I think it's an interesting kind of under...
Yeah, and I think that touching on this again with other movies in the future is a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, when we propose... Think... Oh, sorry, go ahead, it's exploding.
Oh, I think like maybe it's a big discussion topic for when we've got a bit more time, but mm-hmm. Like I can't help but think of stuff like Alien, you know, and I think, I don't know if I want my body to go through that. I know our bodies are designed for it, but I was having this conversation with Mr. Explodey about, you know, why is childbirth so horrible? You know, like, wouldn't we have evolved to make it, you know, if we need it for our species to survive, would we not have evolved to make it, you know, a pleasurable experience now so that we do it more? And he was saying something like, because it works, it doesn't need to be, because, yeah. you know, you go through the process and then you have a baby and then that's it. And your species is propagated by that. It doesn't need to be pleasurable because
it's
the end of
the process. It's just good enough for you to be able to, like, the survival rate is just high enough that you don't, it doesn't need to evolve further. So do you guys have anything else to say about Lords of Salem? Would you recommend people check it out?
Yeah, I definitely recommend people check it out. I think it's an experience.
Definitely. And if you're really into horror, I think it's something you should see because it has so many interesting new original ideas and images in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And try to leave your anti-Rombie.
Rombie.
I would like him to make a Rombity. What would that be? A romantic zombie comedy? I don't know. Anyways, you have to try to leave your, like, Rob Zombie hatred at the door and just see it with, like, untainted eyes.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to see it again.
Yeah. I recommend it. I saw it twice, and it was time and money well spent. Take someone who hasn't seen it with you, though. So that
yeah.
when you get to the slow bits, you know you have something to look forward to. Watching your friend squirm. Okay, so I guess that's it for the main portion of the podcast. Do you want to take it away, Miss Explody Joe?
Yeah, well, since we're talking about motherhood and maternity and babies and stuff like that, we thought we would do the Zombie Girls Beginner's Guide to... I don't know, kid-friendly horror or films that we might show our kids if we had any to sort of get them into horror.
Like
I don't know what sort of age
Rachel,
I've got two lists. I don't know what sort of age you guys are thinking.
Well, I'm thinking like what I would show as the cool aunt, like what movies I would like yeah. show a little okay. kid, like a younger kid. Not a little oh. tiny kid. Like
oh, okay.
I'm not like showing the fetus thinking... this movie, but
right. Yeah.
How did you think about it?
Well, I started watching horror when I was about sort of maybe 12, 13. And I mean, the first, I've just got a very short list of the first sort of films I saw. So I've got Alien and It and The Shining and Candyman and Hellraiser and Evil Dead 2. I don't think I'd perhaps show those to a kid.
Yeah.
But if we're talking
Candyman,
sort of like...
Candyman? No. When like there's a decapitated Rottweiler, I'm thinking no.
Yeah, not so much. If we're talking sort of like under 10, I've got a list of five and I'm just trying to narrow it down to three now. I think I might go Poltergeist, Ghostbusters, and Coraline. I think that might
good
be my
list.
Good job.
Yeah.
Good list.
Yeah, and Coraline maybe we could put into a future, you know, if we revisit Motherhood again.
Oh yeah, I think that definitely is on the list. That's one of the things that we didn't say is that when we decided to tackle Motherhood as a topic, the list just kept growing and growing. And we're like, okay, clearly this is a series of shows, so mm-hmm. we'll be returning to Motherhood for in the
yeah.
future. But those are good choices. Mm-hmm. Although, I mean, Poltergeist is, like, I think that's responsible for, like, 90% of childhood fears of clowns.
Yeah,
that's true. Between that and It.
Yeah.
It's kind of a wrap for clowns. How about you, Ariel? What's your list?
Well, I started watching horror a lot earlier than sounds like Jody did. And I was having a hard time making choices because what I think my dad showed me and what I was okay with at a younger age, I'm not sure if I would show my own kid that young. Just mm-hmm. because I'm thinking about like my niece and nephew and I don't know that I could show them the same movies he showed
yeah.
me
okay.
with a clear conscience, you know. But I you know, Psycho was one of the earliest movies.
What?
And here's the thing. I know that it's...
Holy
I know what
shit.
I just said, and I'm kind of contradicting myself here. But if I had a kid, I don't know that I could not show them that movie because it was so
formative. Okay, when you say kid, though, are you thinking like 10? Or are you
I
thinking
saw it
like...
when I was 5.
When you were 5, well, I mean, I guess you just don't pick up on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of
and
stuff.
And I saw
that
it, yeah, and then I kept seeing, I saw it again, like, in the next, you know, few years, like 7 and 10 and 15, okay.
Yeah.
So, no, I wouldn't show them at 5 years old, probably, but, you know, 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do.
I also thought about the original Hammer Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Because those were, again, movies that, like, I was raised with. And I picked Poltergeist, too. I mean, as well. Not not Poltergeist, the second one.
I picked Poltergeist 3. Where they're in the, like, tall, like, the skyscraper.
Because it's a great movie, and it has kids in it, and I think that it would be a good one to show kids. But again, not necessarily a 5-year-old. If I was going to show a really young kid something, I think that it might be good to start with something that isn't necessarily like a classic horror, but has horror elements. Like we were looking at some things online, and I think something like The Witches would be a good way to start, you know, where it has elements that are horror-ish, but they're not going to give a kid a nightmare, and you could kind of ease them into to it that way, instead mm-hmm. of, you know, going right to Poltergeist. mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Good times. So, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I actually have 4 things. Is that okay, mm-hmm. Exploded Joe?
I guess so, yeah. That's fine.
I mean, it's a little bit of a cheat. But for me, I was thinking, when showing a kid a horror movie, I was, like, a born horror fan. Like, I remember my mom would read to me at night, and she read me that A Wrinkle in Time book.
I love that.
And the cover had this really creepy, like, face with a son with, like, a weird face on it. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that cover?
Yes.
And we got to the end of the book, and she told me I cried because it wasn't scary.
Oh, oh wow.
I kept waiting for it to get scary, apparently. And it never did. And I was super pissed. So, I mean, like, and then my other favorite movies when I was a kid were, like, Jason and the Argonauts with, like, and the skeleton part was my favorite. With the dragon, mm-hmm. He throws a dragon teeth and they turn into skeletons was totally my favorite part. But I think part of it is, like, when I'm thinking about showing something to a kid, I would want to pick something that has scary elements but is really fun. And so that's why I think Ghostbusters was a really good choice on our list.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's that good combo of adventure and horror. So I would pick something like, I think Monster House would be a good one because it definitely is scary in moments for kids, but it's also funny and fun and ultimately has an ending that's kind of safe so that they wouldn't necessarily have tons of nightmares and would not be totally traumatized and would come back for more.
Like my picks, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, basically. Psycho. That's what I'm calling that. Well, I mean, that would be sort of the, like, litmus test for the kids. Like, if they could make it through Monster House, then I would step up my game and, to something, and this is one that scared the crap out of me when I was a kid, which is Gremlins. Because you have Gizmo, which is cute and fun.
Yes.
So the kids can really get into Gizmo, but then there's the horror aspect of, like, Stripe and his crew.
Yeah.
And on that same vein, a little bit, would be Tremors.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a fun movie.
I love that movie.
So did I.
My last movie is The Gate. Because now this is the one where they did okay with Monster House, they did okay with Gremlins, they did okay with Tremors, and I feel like The Gate is the most full-on horror.
Okay.
But it's like got young kids in it, so that there's something for them to identify with. But like there's some really scary shit that happens in that movie. Like the thing with the eye and the hand and the little monster. Oh, you've never seen The Gate?
No.
Oh, you gotta check it out.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of those, I think it still works even if you haven't seen it as a kid, but it's definitely like, it's scary, there's scary aspects about like, are the parents dead, and there's monsters, and there's little monsters attacking the house, and it's pretty full on horror for kids, I would say. My final pick while you were away was The Gate.
Was The Gate? Oh, okay.
Did you see that movie?
No.
With the little claymation monsters?
Oh, yes! Oh, that is a good one.
They come out of the hole in the backyard.
I forgot about that.
So, those are my picks. All right, so let's wrap this sucker up. This is the point in the show where normally I would give my Netflix streaming pick, and Sarah would give her anti-pick. Once again, we're going to fail you. Because I don't have a Netflix streaming pick this month, or I haven't seen anything good come up on the... I mean, like, I would say John Dies at the End has shown up on there, but I've talked about that movie so much on the show. If you haven't seen it, definitely check that out. Oh, it's so good. You gotta watch it. So instead, I'm gonna break tradition and I'm going to give a board game recommendation. Now, it's not like Chutes and Ladders. It actually has a little bit of a horror aspect to it. It's not a new game. It's from 2009. It won like a ton of awards. It's called Pandemic. And in the game, you play cooperatively with a group of people. You are a group of scientists and sort of infection specialists who are trying to eradicate 4 diseases that have broken out across the world. And so as a team, you strategize to find a cure for the diseases, but on every turn, as well as working towards that, you also infect additional cities. So you're kind of like racing against the clock. There's like a ton of ways to lose the game. Like if you infect too many places, if there are too many outbreaks, if you run out of cards, like there's tons of ways that it can happen. But there's only one way to win, and that's to cure all 4 diseases. It is a ton of fun. It's really challenging. Each role that you play has special abilities that you can use, and use that's part of the strategy of figuring out how you're going to tackle the disease. The games run about 45 minutes to an hour each, and I am completely obsessed with this game. I got it. We've been planning our, like, to start having monthly board game nights. So I was like, I had heard this recommended, so I checked it out, and I was like, okay, I want to familiarize myself with the game before. I got it on Monday. I've played it every day since. So, high recommendation of Pandemic. If you're someone who loves board games, check it out. If you're someone who thinks you don't like board games, check it out, because it's actually a ton of fun. All right,
That's it for awesome. Me, unless there's anything you ladies wanted to talk about before we flee the scene.
No, I think we're good.
All right. Thanks to everyone for listening to another fabulous episode of the Zombie Girls podcast. Please leave us a review in iTunes. That's if you love the show and you want to support us, that's one of the best ways to do it because it helps us increase our ranking on iTunes and then we can...
We'd love you for it.
Yeah, so we'll love you forever and send you virtual kisses and hugs and all that good stuff. Feel free to leave us a voicemail at 6786-Z-Girls. That's 6786-94-7759. You can email me at rachel@zombiegirls.com. And you can follow us on Facebook. And I think that's enough plugs for one day.
Yeah, I think so.
Also, if you can't get enough of our lovely voices, you can hear more of Explody Joe on the excellent X-Files themed podcast, The Explody Files. And as the latest co-host of the zombie or of a Splattercast, you can get more of these sexy dulcet sounds of my voice on that episode. On our latest episode is on Kill List and Angel Heart, so check that out. All right, that's it for me. Thanks again for listening. Bye. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
What? Well, let me note the time. What time is it right now? Because I gotta edit this out. 42 minutes. 42 minutes. Okay. I guess it started because Melinda said that she was taking Liam to the Oakland Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And Matilda said, "Aw, thanks. I'm going to the ER with crippling sciatic pain, but I'd rather go look at meerkat babies. Be sure to check out the oversized genitalia on the bats." That's my Matilda. Oh my god.
Have you played the Dark Crystal drinking game?
No.
Oh, every time they say Gelfling drink, which is fine until they get to that one scene where she's like, "Oh, it looks like Gelfling, smells like Gelfling. Oh, I thought Gelfling were all extinct," and you're going, "Ah, drink, 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 drink." It's hot.
I will not do that, goddammit. You can't make me! Get away from me, penises! Stay away! Okay, I need to cut that. Noting that right now. Stay away from me, penises. Cutting room floor.
Some promo material.
Oh, no! Okay, we don't... Peace out.